Thanks very much, Lord Selborne. It's a pleasure and a privilege to be here with you tonight. I'm going to take for granted that universities should have the kind of broad agenda which Lord Selborne described. I'm principally going to talk about issues of balance and engagement with stakeholders in current times where one might say there's a bit of a trust deficit from society to universities. And let me clear the decks first by saying, of course, the Act does not require universities to do anything other than teach students, essentially, and our esteemed third speaker will justify that position. They don't need to have, as in Australia, a research agenda or so on. So there are those for who this talk just does not apply, and we should respect, indeed my son works for an alternate provider with a very narrow focus, we should respect the diversity they bring to our community. But tonight, I think we're talking about universities whose aspiration is to have a broad-based agenda. I have just returned from Beijing, and I've been in 16 countries this year pursuing UKRI and the country's aim to build global relationships in the world that we may be in after tonight. I put a lot of effort into it. What is my summary view? They think we are wonderful. I am just stunned by the respect and admiration there is for UK universities, from universities of all kinds, from governments of all kinds. They admire the way our system works, so just tell me how UKRI is getting on, for example. They want to know how it works, and they're full of admiration for what we're achieving. The very top places, I visited Stanford and Berkeley, very respectful of what's happening in this country, and not just our best universities. So that's the puff bit. I noticed everybody looked very happy there. Perhaps we're not going to stay there. So what are universities for? My first question is, who's asking? And this subject is typically discussed by people with a particular sectional interest who feel they're not getting their fair share of the attention or the cake. At the moment, I think today had the all-party parliamentary group report on student entrepreneurship, I think it was, with some very strong and good points about how universities could support students better in that. But an underlying tone of they haven't quite given us the attention we deserve. Lord Carslake's Civic Commission is fairly strong on the need for universities to be more strongly driven by local civic objectives. I understand that. But my experience in talking to many of those sectional groups is, to be honest, they're only interested in their engagement with universities. And it's very frustrating, I think, for universities to be consistently asked to dance too many tunes. But nevertheless, I think that is the way it has to be. I think my particular concern about many of those groups, and business, I'm afraid, often take the same line, is that they see it as a power relationship with universities, where universities are in service to whichever group is lobbying them at any one point. I think that's it's particularly difficult to sustain an engagement where everybody thinks you're the lesser partner, particularly when you think you are some of the best universities in the world. Some of, in my view, the best things the UK has in global engagement. So I think the nature of the relationship needs to be moved, not from a position of ownership of universities by many, many groups, but to a position of partnership. And it's not an assertion of rights from other groups to attention from universities, but a discussion of mutual benefit and mutual interest. So I want to talk about resetting on partnership, but then come to the point that having a partnership is difficult if there is no trust. And as I suggested at the start, you only need to read the papers every day to see the very considerable trust deficit there is. And my thesis really is that the only way universities will develop balanced, respectful partnerships with different groups, is to rebuild the trust that society has in them, and that just sitting, waiting for trust to return will not achieve that. There are series of steps that I think universities need to take. We, of course, have to start from the point of view, which I think Lord Selborne has already said, that universities are autonomous, legally private institutions who have choices about what they should do. Every time that statement is made, it does not help. It may be true. The truth does not necessarily help. And a very considerable reiteration of that hinders the building of a trust-based relationship. I think universities also are very good at talking about academic freedom, perhaps not so good about talking about academic responsibility. And I think a better balanced approach to freedom and responsibility is a step towards building partnerships. I think universities also have demonstrated why there is a trust deficit very readily recently. Approaches, for example, to the TEF, and just to say that similarly in Australia to their engagement and impact metrics, that why should we do it if there's no money in it, reduces universities to guns for hire. Autonomous institutions taking wise choices have to display their liberal values by not just always chasing the money. And that argument has just been used in public so often about the TEF, a truculent approach to accountability. An accountability overload, universities would say, and Stephen Collini used up quite a lot of space in the London Review of Bukes, suggesting that there was an accountability overload. I think it's difficult to justify too much accountability, because the mere fact that it's being threatened indicates that society has lost confidence and trust in universities. The way, I think, to recover that confidence and trust is not to reject the need for accountability, but to work with it and demonstrate that it may not, in due course, be needed. And truculence about improving the lot of students, I accept all the arguments about whether the TEF is the right vehicle. That's a good discussion to have. But to shy away from your accountability on your core responsibility seems to me a serious contributor to the trust deficit which universities now have. I think we need, too, to move forward with universities displaying more leadership. We have some wonderful people, one of who's going to sit next to me, leading our universities, but it is very difficult for them, for two reasons that I'm going to mention, there are others, to really demonstrate the leadership I think that is required. One, of course, is the Achilles heel that there has been around remuneration. I think we could learn a lot from the way the University of Bath handled their situation and came out with a very good framework and explanation, which I think provided evidence for a way forward on that. And I'm disappointed, I think it's a pity that other universities haven't chosen to do that. I think many universities have taken steps to address the issue, but they've not done it as publicly as Bath has, which I think has helped rebuild trust. The other problem, I think, is not caused by vice-chancellors, but they are to an extent hindered by the discussion around the pensions dispute. I will not comment on that because I'm conflicted as a USS member. I have been absolutely appalled by the sustained, vitriolic, personal abuse directed towards some of our vice-chancellors, who I know well. I don't think that kind of abuse is ever justified. It certainly isn't justified with people who are attempting to be fair and reasonable across a very difficult issue. It's far worse than anything I've seen in politics in this country. It's even worse than politics in Australia, where personal abuse is the modus operandi. And I think those in the workforce, a minority no doubt, but nevertheless, enough of a minority to target one by one a number of vice-chancellors, they must realise that there are consequences in undermining public trust in universities when they are not working with, but against their university leaders. So I think in those two areas, remuneration and respect from their staff, we need to see attention given if we're to address trust with the public. I also think that so much of the university discourse over the last couple of years has been couched entirely in terms of self-interest. Tonight, as I think Nancy said to me as I stepped up here, is there news? We all want to hear if there is news. But I think, again, sustained discussion in universities of how Brexit would affect them, rather than some consideration of how Brexit might affect their communities and some indication of tolerance to that and sympathy for the communities in which they are, I think that has, again, undermined the respect that society has in our universities. So therefore, I think we need to have greater understanding of the role, the recognition that universities have a role in civil society, the responsibility which comes with that. Universities are typically the largest or second largest employer after the health service in communities, certainly outside London and the South East. In many communities, they underpin the whole business environment, both through their knowledge-based interactions and through providing skills. They are in receipt of large sums of public funding one way or another, or underpinning funding from the government in terms of student fees, which is not an entitlement to universities, and I thought we established that when dealing with impact 10 years ago. It's not an entitlement, it's a contract with the people. And I think the tone of some university engagement could focus more on not just on the benefit there is to a university, but from the way the university works with stakeholders. I'd also pick out, to be very specific, the difficulty that universities are having in resetting the relationship with the body that is now a regulator. Very visible resentment at the tone of the regulator, and I think lack of understanding that it is necessary for the new regulatory role to adopt an arm's length position, that yes, the tone on occasions will be difficult as the regulator learns more about its role, but surely the self-confidence which universities have should enable them to deal generously with the engagement they're having, to rise above some short-term difficulties in communication, and to demonstrate that, as I believe they do, universities have got very strong positions to discuss with the regulator and a willingness to accept where there may be conditions that the regulator may want to discuss. I just can't believe that universities can rise above that and they feel the need for a very soft treatment, which I'm afraid many vice-chancellors said personally to me. And I think, just to pick a fifth thing, the immunity from pressures. Universities have to recognise they've had some immunity from the pressures which their communities and neighbourhoods have had. Real protection after the global financial crisis. And I would say that, particularly with the difficulty that is sometimes in redefining areas within universities and the workforce problems there are with that, that it's not unnoticed in government that universities sometimes find it difficult to take tough decisions. Not, I think, because vice-chancellors don't want to, but because of the reception that they get internally. So ready deployment of autonomy and academic freedom has contributed to that loss of respect and it needs to overcome. What do we do? And I do think that strong leadership from our vice-chancellors, better support from our governing bodies is required. I want to see our vice-chancellors in the press respected, speaking publicly about the issues of the day, particularly as universities can contribute. I believe that our universities are a major contributor in a post-Brexit world to building new relationships around the world, which I'm privileged to play just a tiny part in, but our universities need to take forward. I think they are contributors to our business environment, the cultural environment. They are at the heart of what a new post-Brexit nation should be if they wish to grab that opportunity. And I think that leadership is required to do it, and a sustained effort to build trust by demonstrating their care and concern for different groups. Yes, there's the balance to be made from working in the areas that we've talked about. It's for universities, in my view, to demonstrate that they are thinking, behaving thoughtfully about that. They're considering the interests of others. They are not seeking entirely to be the recipients of benefit from the relations, but I do believe there should always be mutual benefit. And I don't feel comfortable with those who argue that universities should do a load of things for any particular group without clear evidence of where there is mutual benefit. Universities are not there to serve everyone. They are there to partner everyone. So I think we need, I would propose, a sustained effort to rebuild trust, some clear, simple decisions. Why don't you stop doing unconditional offers when it's very clear as a public view that that is unacceptable? Why just knuckle down when I think, and there's a range of other simple things, lack of willingness to engage with grade inflation perhaps, where I think universities could take the lead by working collectively. And there perhaps is the final crunch. The Universities of Australia had a very difficult period with the government and, to be honest, took the government head on. And they won some and they lost some, in my judgment. But I asked them, how did you manage to do that? We all sat together in a room and we agreed we would stick together and face the fact that the government might challenge us on some stuff, which they did. Now, people tell me, how can we stick together? We're in competition in the UK. Well, I just say to you, this is where we are. If you continue to behave in an entirely individual manner, I don't see how you can rebuild trust, because that's a collective thing. So I guess this is a direct challenge to our university leaders to work better together, to take visible steps, and I've mentioned a few, but I think there are more. I don't need to read a list, to rebuild trust by demonstrating the care and concern that universities have for the criticisms and the willingness to respond to them, sometimes by changing what they do, sometimes with evidence. I do believe that it is necessary for the future of the country that our countries recover, our universities recover their position of thought leadership and respect. I think it's necessary for our country that we have better balanced relations in partnership, not in service, with many of the groups that would like to work with us. I think the opportunities are there. But I also think there may be some difficult decisions about funding to come. Virtually every other societal body has had to face that sort of challenge, and many of them have risen to them, although some have not. I want our universities to be winners. I want them to retain their global position, and I want them to regain respect. I hope you want that too. Thank you.